Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Pacific Grove on KAZU. This is broadcast number 560. It is August the 30th, 1982. For many years on my programs, I've been talking about the missing millions, the billions floating around, the chance of the various banks going under, and the implications based upon corruption that is causing this event to take place at this time. Incidentally, on the Monterey Peninsula, we were spared by a very smart person who's in charge of our taxes, Mr. Thomas C. White, former San Francisco State University tax law instructor. He is here as treasurer of the Monterey County. And he got word that $21 million of county money from Monterey County was in the bank in New York City that went bankrupt, the Lombard Wall Investment Company. And it was in London. $10 million of Monterey was in London. And every week I've been talking about London is missing $400 million from the Luxembourg Bank that the Vatican set up and won't. Bank of Italy won't stand by. The Banco Ambrosiana won't stand by. 250 banks are missing hundreds of millions of dollars from Luxembourg and Liechtenstein, and of course the money that went down to the dummy fronts in Panama. Now, London is very nervous about this. There are many crises going on, and what I've said for a long time is that when one city is missing money, the other bank sends it to them and gives it to them to hold over the crisis so people don't pull out, and then it floats back to us from another source. The city of Monterey, right here in our own area, had $21 million, and $10 million of it was already in London. Now, our particular official here, our tax law expert, the one in charge of our taxes, was on the telephone for 8 days. He made 120 calls, he said. It was in the newspaper. And he got the money back from Monterey County, but he was the only person who got his investment back. Chase Manhattan and this particular investment firm lost millions of dollars, and the Port Authority in New York City lost, forget the figure, it was hundreds of millions of dollars, $355 million, the Port Authority, in a company that went bankrupt. A lot of people wonder, how do the political assassinations of who killed heads of states, whether it's John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy or Martin Luther King, or we were talking in the studio earlier about the killing of Sadat, or heads of states of various other countries, what does that got to do with how we're living today? When these various juntas come along, when Allende was murdered, or in any other country, when the heads of states are murdered, what has that got to do with us? What it has to do with us is that the people who did the murdering have combined intelligence sources with organized crime and mafia and with the military. And with those combinations, and every week more and more is coming about, this marriage, this three-way partnership of the military, the intelligence, the mafia, and the crime syndicate and the mafia, and the churches such as the Vatican or the Mormon Church with their finger in the till. There are various large institutions involved, and when they cover up these murders and begin to amass as a power base because of things that they know that shouldn't have happened, they have accumulated a tremendous amount of capital, and they're taking it out of this country and putting it somewhere else, which isn't the topic for tonight of where it goes, but the fact is that it goes. Now, Lombard Wall went bankrupt in New York City with tremendous investments there that I can do another program about on some of the recent corporations and banks that have gone bankrupt. They say 268 banks will go within 1 year, maybe in 6 months. But this particular assessor here in the treasurer of Monterey County was the only person to get the money back. Now, there'd be a lot of jobs lost and schools affected, and whatever it takes to run this county, I don't think that we would appreciate being without that $21 million, and we wouldn't appreciate it over in London bailing out their investments into these sleazy offshore base investments that are collapsing now under the weight of these scandals triggered recently by the murder of Roberta Calvi, the president of the Banco Ambrosiano, who was murdered in London. These scandals had to come out anyway, and they are opening up in every newspaper every day. But here was California sending money to London to bail them out. Now, until we go after the particular criminals for the crimes that are stated in the courts, in hearings, and in testimony, the matter will get worse. There's no way to clean up this economic problem until we give those people the boot out the door and remove them from power. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal, I'll go into it a little more on this program, about Paul Marcinkus, the treasurer of the Vatican, and $950 million of forged stock, counterfeit stock that was being made, and he would get a payoff of $150 million. This is the Wall Street Journal, and I've said before, when I first started on the air, I would use all kinds of newspapers, and I would quote the Berkeley Barb, the LA Free Press, the Alternative News, the Village Voice, and people would say, well, where are you getting your information? Well, I'm right now using the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the establishment media, and they're telling it like it is because they no longer can live with the blinders on. It may not be that they're going to go right after the jugular to solve these problems, but if they don't, the institutions are collapsing, and it's only a matter of time till they have to re-examine some of the situations that they've failed to acknowledge for many, many years. The Wall Street Journal, Wednesday, August 25th, has a story, World's Financial Scandals, comma, Debt Crisis Rocking International Banking System. It just begins by saying the foreign exchange and the international market are far less than active since the wake of the Banco Ambrosiano scandal in Italy, the collapse of Penn Square in Oklahoma, the AEG, Telefunken AG in West Germany, the electronic firm, and the Mexican foreign exchange and debt crisis. Now, how many people who have listened to me through the years know that I've talked about Michael Sindona, the Franklin National Bank, the Milan banks, the collapse? I've been talking about these for a long time, and now the Wall Street Journal said the Bank of Italy's decision not to stand by the losses of Ambrosiano and Luxembourg's holding company, that's $400 million alone that affected the Midland Bank and the Hambros Bank in London and other banks too. It's making the other bankers nervous as well as the offshore centers. So finally, the Wall Street Journal, a very week when the stocks are selling like mad to give the appearance that there's this great prosperity that we're on going forward. The truth is that if you open the Wall Street Journal this past week while the market appears that there's a lot of buying and that has to crash, that's just a false promotion of a happy front. The world's financial scandals are rocking the international banking system. We'll do more on the banks in a minute. I did want to mention the local issue of investing in a company that sends it to London and how close we came when everybody else lost their shirt. Monterey County was spared that. Now, you know, every week or as many weeks as it takes, I do an update on my favorite subject. And maybe we can come to a head on this matter if all of you will help me. I don't think that there ever has been an ongoing research subject done on the air almost every week or every few weeks on one continuous thing where I'm asking you, the listeners, to help me solve this particular problem. And if you do, and I'm getting many letters and articles from people and books from people, we'll put it in an accumulated book, and everyone who's participated will be part of that story, whatever the chips, wherever they fall. The story, of course, is the story of Fritz G. Kramer, a fellow I've been trying to trace down who had the important position of advising the chief of staff in the Pentagon for 30 years, being the godfather of Henry Kissinger, Alexander Haig, Mr. Sonnenfeld, Vernon Walters, and so forth. And I mentioned several weeks ago that the Army sent me information about Mr. Fritz Gustav Anton Kramer, and I wanted to know where he was in certain cities during World War II and when the war was over, because Adolf Hitler's Fritz Kramer, for those of you who don't know this story, was taken prisoner at the Dachau trials for the Malmondy massacre of American soldiers. And the other Kramer came into the United States. He was a German with a degree in Italy and from Germany who came in the Army, United States Army, recruited Henry Kissinger, went over to Europe into seven countries, and disappeared visually after that time forever, and Hitler's Kramer physically disappeared. The other one is running around Washington, but you don't see his picture or any books about him. And in my struggle of Kramer versus Kramer, I'm trying to find out if they're the same person. And the solution to that problem may come up now in the fall, because many of you saw 60 Minutes, and the question of war criminals illegally coming into the United States. Now, if this Fritz Kramer was a war criminal, if he's the same person, he's here illegally. If he's not the same person, it doesn't matter. But I wouldn't spend so much time if I didn't think it wasn't the same person. So I've written to a congressman, one of my World Watchers listeners, got me the address of a member on the committee, and I'm going to share that with you and tell you what I wrote to him this week. But I did get from St. Louis, Missouri, a sheet on Fritz Kramer. They told me more would be coming. I've been writing to the Defense Department under Freedom of Information. I've been writing to various agencies. And they sent me a sheet dated August 18th, 1982, Fritz G. Kramer. And he has two serial numbers. And this is a military area. There's many military people in this area. And I want you to listen to what I'm saying and tell me if you think this is unusual or not. And if it is or isn't, I'll be home later this evening. Call and let me know your opinion on this, because I don't know that much about the military. What they said was that this Fritz Kramer, and I don't know how many people have two serial numbers, this subject served in the Army of the United States from April 19th, 1945 to February 25th, 1948, and he was, and then it says honorably relief for active duty. So I don't think it's an American-born person who wrote it, because that isn't our style of grammar. Honorably relief for active duty as first lieutenant, okay, February 25th, 1948. Then down before, it said prior enlisted service under serial number. This is 33741993. That doesn't matter. It's got his prior service, May 28th, 1943, to April the 18th, 1945. Now, what they have up above, his service, his time in the service, then they have down below another service. And what it comes to is that they said he enlisted May 28th and was honorably discharged April 18th, 1945. He joined in 1943. In June 43, he went right into military intelligence and went right down to Louisiana to get Henry Kissinger and to take him to Europe. But he was honorably discharged April 18, 1945. And then on April the 19th, the subject went back into the United States Army the next day with a new serial number, evidently, and was discharged in February 1948. Now, the first paper I got from the Army, the chief of security, security group, said that he enlisted, was inducted May 21st, and the other paper from the St. Louis National Personnel Record Center said he was enlisted into the Army, inducted on May 28th. So there's a 7-day difference in the induction, and he was given this one serial number and served till April the 18th. Then he was given another serial number. Now, at the height of the war, during April 18th or 19th, Hitler was almost through. The Western Army was almost in Berlin. It was just a fait accompli to wipe it up. Franklin Roosevelt was dead. The troops were pouring in. And this Kramer, according to one government document, was traveling around in these various countries that I told you before on the air, in this missing time period from 1944 to April 1845. He was in Scotland, England, France, Belgium, Germany, and so forth. But on 19th of April, one story has, he went on to be temporarily appointed second lieutenant. So one set of documents says he was honorably discharged on the 18th of April, and the other one has him serving overseas on the 19th of April and re-entering the Army on the 19th of April. Now, if you think that's a little unusual, call me, any military people listening tonight. My number's listed in the phone book. I'd really like to talk to you. And if you can't get me this evening, the line is busy, try in a week or two or next week or during the week. I just want to know if it's unusual at the height of a war when one set of papers from the government said that he served continuously to 1948, that he is discharged on the 18th of April, re-enlisted on the 19th, and given a new serial number while he is traveling around for the Army. He takes on a new serial number. Now, I think that's unusual, but we'll pursue that some more. In regards to this letter I sent to the congressman, there's one congressman who will be going into this matter, and he's a member of a committee in Congress, and I don't know the other members, but we can't wait till the committee gets started. It's Representative Barney Frank. And if you call me or if you want to write, it's the Washington office in the Longworth Building, Washington, D.C., a member of Congress, Representative Barney Frank. And he wrote to one of the listeners of World Watcher and said he appreciated his writing to him, and he said they are reopening the congressional investigation of government involvement in granting citizenship to former Nazis because it was against the law to bring them in. I appreciate your taking the time to write on this issue. And Congress, there will be hearings conducted by the Immigration Subcommittee. So if one of you good World Watchers wants to get me that information from the library, I don't have their current directory, the Immigration Subcommittee, and get every member of Congress, then we can write to them and send them information and ask that Mr. Fritz Kramer come to that committee and see when he was made a citizen or if he even is a citizen of the United States. He may be a floating non-citizen who advises all our chief of staff with all the men from Reinhard Gehlen's agency, Adolf Hitler's intelligence agency, running the Pentagon. That is what I think happened to the United States, and we will pursue this. So it is the Immigration Subcommittee. Let's get every name on there or write to Representative Barney Frank and ask him who else is on the committee. And we'll get a package together on Fritz Kramer and send it to every member of the committee. Now, I'm going to briefly mention tonight, and then I'm going to outline at length three magnificent articles that were in the Wall Street Journal this week. Some of you saw them because I was getting calls like mad. But it is my custom when I get articles like this to sit and type and outline them in detail. They're on the Nugan Hand Bank in Australia, named after Frank Nugan, who was murdered in January 1970. Frank Nugan was murdered, and it opened up a can of worms that was long coming. This is 2 years later, 2.5 years later, that the murder triggered, of course, many investigations that probably would have come anyway, but this first article is a three-part article by Jonathan Quitney, Quitney, and he was the one who wrote the story of the corporations and the mafia and the links of organized crime to various corporations. He's a very good writer, and this is a three-part story of his. The first part is called The Fall of a Banking Firm Spotlights the Role of High U.S. Officials. I might mention briefly in getting to this subject about Frank Nugan, who was murdered in January 1980, and Michael Hand, who disappeared, that I did many broadcasts on this subject, and you can get those tapes, back tapes, and you can also get the sheets that accompanied them if you can't afford the tapes. But July 27, 1980, that was 2 years ago this summer, I did one broadcast, number 451, on the most important stories of the past 2 years. That was in July. And 1 month later was the first story in August 31st, just 2 years ago tomorrow, was the story in the London Times on the Nugan Hand Bank. Now, Frank Nugan had been murdered in January, and the London Times carried it in August. Then later in the year, in October, I did a story, The Bank, the CIA, Heroin, and Murder, covering the London Times story, The Murdered Banker's White House Connections, going into Jimmy Carter, General Omar Torrijos in Panama, the Four Continents involved, and various cast of characters. And on that broadcast 2 years ago, I said, this is from the sheet that went with the tape, Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan have too many connections to the following. One, narcotics traffic worldwide. 2, organized crime and the mob syndicate. 3, the Nazis from Germany, fascists from Italy. This involves the Michelson donor and the Vatican scandal now, and in Great Britain and in Japan. 2, fundamentalist religious fanatics, and this again is where I think this missing billions is going, and to the defense intelligence agencies and the CIA and the Pentagon. Both men have too many connections. And in November, 2 years ago, I did a broadcast on the Nguyen Bank, the missing $500 million to $1 billion, an article on the London Times and the chronology of the history of that bank. In fact, 2 years ago, on that sheet that was accompanied the tapes, I said Secretary George Shultz would be Secretary of State for Ronald Reagan. He is now president of Bechtel Corporation. And that same broadcast 2 years ago, I was talking about Daniel Ludwig, a man just written up in Forbes magazine as being the richest man in America, the mysterious Mr. Ludwig from Michigan and from the Amazon, who is mentioned in the Wall Street Journal and the Nguyen Bank connections just this week. 2 years ago, week after week, I was hitting the stories of the scandal and the implications, and the last 2 years I've saved mountains of articles. So you can see how excited I was getting back to the New York Times stories on the Nguyen this week. Now, the one article called Australian Mystery, the first one, this is August 24th, Fall of a Banking Firm, spotlights the role of high U.S. officials. Frank Nguyen's violent death opens the lid on odd traffic in dope, in foreign funds. Politicians are charged with cover-up. Now, one of the scandalous things, and I'll share it with you here, I'm not even going to let you guess, was as this story goes with the highest-ranking military, and I can read you some of their names, the admirals and generals from the United States. In fact, there's a section called Admirals and Generals. Ex-CIA men took prominent roles in the Nguyen Bank. This was washing money, heroin, narcotics, brought into our cities. If you wonder why you're being mugged and your houses are being robbed and so forth, to keep up the drug traffic, let me read you the who's who out of Wall Street Journal of people involved in the Nguyen. But what's very righteous about this, among the many, many names, is the airstrip in Australia where the narcotics were flowing and flow from the Southeast Asian war. You know that lovely war we had over there? Well, the airstrip, the landing strip, according to the New York, the Wall Street Journal, the landing strip involved in the 1973 Australian Narcotics Bureau report was on a real estate development promoted by American singer Pat Boone and financed by millionaire shipping magnate D.K. Ludwig. Isn't that righteous? I mean, you know how he wouldn't let Debbie and the girls hold hands with anybody until they were married. He put down the hippies. He belongs to the moral majority. He wants to turn the whole world Christian with his righteousness. Isn't it marvelous that Pat Boone, Mr. Kling, I mean, all the images that you ever had, you can always throw them out and know that the reason they got where they did was that they were cutting a slice of the heroin and the cocaine and the action. And how did Mr. Ludwig, besides the oil tankers, become the richest man in America? We're talking about a bank where billions float and $500 million to a billion is missing today. Well, that was the landing strip of those two lovely people. The first article began with a who's who of men that would take the whole hour to describe, but I'll briefly tell you some of them. One is Admiral Earl Buddy Yates. In 1943, a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, this is Annapolis, like Jimmy Carter, with his dope dealers down in Atlanta, Georgia. He was a Legion of Honor winner in Vietnam, commanded the Air Force carrier USS John F. Kennedy. He was the head of the Nguyen Bank. He became the president in 1977. Of course, our vice president, George Bush, was involved with the Task Force 157, the Nguyen Bank, when he was CIA director. As a matter of fact, when the Republicans had their state convention, I was over here handing out pamphlets about George Bush and the Nguyen Bank and the dope dealing and the heroin traffic. Well, this is the gang that he worked with when he was CIA director just for a year. But as vice president, I believe that he was pulled in to cover the bases because these stories are breaking in the parliament down in Australia and all over the world and are attached to the Vatican scandal and the Banco Ambrosiano and the various investments that are floating around with people like the Genovese family, the Gambino family, the Cosa Nostra. This is a fine kettle of fish. Another person was General Edwin F. Black. Now, all these men's names have been mentioned in five or six articles on Nugent until now, but not so much, because Black is a 1940 graduate of West Point. We just had his name, and he was in charge of the Hawaii office, and I accused his office and the Travel Bureau of sending Mark David Chapman around the world and back to kill John Lennon to get rid of him for Ronald Reagan so there'd be no anti-war demonstrations. General Black was stationed in Hawaii, and listen to this one. He graduated from West Point, not Annapolis. He entered the office of the Office of Strategic Services, OSS. That's Mr. William Casey working with his whole gang, with Robert Vesco and Vito Genovese down in Italy as they moved up north until when the war was over and became the CIA. He worked for the OSS, then the CIA. He was the OSS commander in Berlin. Do you like that one? Where Theodore Shackley came from Germany and set up the JM Wave operation that used the anti-Castro Cubans to kill John Kennedy. I'm talking about the guys behind the big team, the murders, their interlocking links with Alan Dulles, who was on the Warren Commission later, and set up the OSS with Mr. Donovan. General Edwin Black was the chief administrative aide and frequent chess opponent of Alan Dulles. He was the head of the CIA. It was his wartime boss. He was close to Richard Helms, who, of course, was a protege of Dulles and little Adolf Hitler. Helms came right along the line and began instigating the mind control programs and so forth for them after the war. There's a long biography about Black. I'll do more next year, and how he's at the Freedom Foundation in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. Then there's a General Earl Cook Jr., whose entry in Who's Who in America tells about his experiences in the Defense Department and high-up Legion of Honor and top medals from Spain and the Philippines and Italy, the three countries where the international fascista, the dope traffic, and so forth are set up, and the Odessa with Otto Skorzeny and Richard, Mr. Hunt, whose wife was chief of the CIA station in Madrid before they blew her up at the time of Watergate on the United Airlines. They got William Colby, the U.S. director of the CIA. He's the one who set off the Phoenix program in Southeast Asia, the assassination teams, and was responsible for about 2 million people in Cambodia dying. Mr. William Colby had mysterious connections with the Nugent Hand banks. They said the operations of the Nugent Hand Bank involved the Caribbean, the Pacific, and there were attempts of William Colby as their attorney for Nugent Hand's mysterious Panama branch. Now, Panama is very important. Torrijos died in a plane crash just at a time when the Nugent Hand stories were breaking, when they were breaking just a while back, the first ones that came. Panama, I mentioned last week, in conjunction with the Vatican money, $1.4 billion that are in 10 offices down there that are doorknobs that have nothing to do with investments for the Vatican at all. Now, another article from New Solidarity that I read this week, new Panama president, you know they have a new one out. This president is Mr. Rovo, the new president Ricardo, who replaced Rovo, pardon me, the former president. New president Ricardo de la Esperella is a former employee of Chase Manhattan Bank, run by Henry Kissinger's, the article says, piggy bank, David Rockefeller. Chase has the largest operations of any foreign bank in Panama. Marcinkus has his dummy fronts there. Nugent Hand with William Colby, the CIA, set up dummy fronts. Jim Jones had millions of dollars in Panamanian banks. As a matter of fact, John Judge in Pennsylvania is putting together a list of the money and the bank titles of Jim Jones in Panama so we can get an overlay. And remember when the Shah of Iran left here, he ran down to his dope dealer Torrijos before he went off to Egypt to die. Panama also is the training school, keep in mind, for run by the United States for all the military dictators in all of South and Central America. Panama is where they're trained to torture, to put heads in water with electricity on them, the electrodes. I don't know if they train them to put rats on the stomach to eat out the intestines that Frank Turpel uses. That sounds like that's his own course. I don't think they thought that one up, but I don't know what they're doing. And last week, I mentioned the mysterious Shaul Eisenberg. who began building the entire world for all their major corporations, not the corporations, but the construction firms all over every fascist country in the world. He started in 1960, United Development Company in Panama. Well, this article lists Walter McDonald, a career CIA officer, Guy Pawker from RAND Corporation, and Dale Holmgren from Taiwan, and Robert Red Jensen. There's a cast of characters in the Wall Street Journal by the 3 days. That is one of them. The other one, the next day, was a beautiful article on U.S. servicemen are big losers in the failure of the Nguyen Bank. Laborers in the Middle East. And this has to do with the Bechtel Corporation and the people that worked for them in Saudi Arabia, the American business people working there. And now they parlayed their money into a bank that gave them high interest because they could use it for heroin and cocaine and Southeast Asian narcotics unto millions of dollars. And when the bank collapsed, the workers that were there lost their money. The second article is U.S. servicemen are big losers, the laborers and the Middle East projects. Well, the Middle East projects are Bechtel, which is a full cycle. Then it goes into a big institution in Hong Kong, the large Hong Kong banks and the Chase Manhattan. And of course, you remember Mr. Pao, who gave